above those three, all three, there's gross physical and subtle physical, and more subtle, but still physical, there's the spiritual platform, the platform of the soul. And spiritual knowledge comes from the platform of the soul. It's in relation to the soul. It's in relation to that which is eternal, which is the soul. Because the configurations of matter, gross or subtle, are not eternal. And the soul is eternal. The soul is, according to the teaching of Bhagavad Gita, it's unchangeable. Similar word is immutable, because mutation means change. Ever existing, the soul never comes into being or goes out of being. Souls are never created at any point in time. They're never destroyed at any point in time. There's not new souls coming into being. They're, as God is eternal, souls are co-eternal. So, those who are wise, they consider that which is eternal to be the self. Nasate vijite bhavo na bhavo vijite sataha ubayor api drishtantas tvanios tattva-darshibihi. The tattva-darshis, the seers of tattva or truth, they give attention to that which is eternal. And while they're noticing that which is not eternal, or asat, they don't place so much value in it. Here today, and maybe even doesn't wait till tomorrow, it's gone. Like a child might look in the clouds in the sky and see there's a beautiful pussycat, and then the cloud transforms and it becomes a lion. And then everything becomes dissipated and it's just broken clouds. So one is bringing joy, another is bringing fear, and another is neutral. So like the configuration of clouds, the configuration of matter is not something that a transcendentalist places value in. They may notice, oh, look at that interesting configuration, oh, look at that interesting configuration. But it's not something that one identifies with as reality. And these tattva-darshis, or the seers of the truth, understand that which is sat, that which is permanent and enduring, is the real self. So, back to Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva has just compiled the Vedas. And within the Vedas, because we discussed this already, but the series of verses are on the same topic. Because the Vedas are complete knowledge, the Vedas give information how to deal with this plane of consciousness or that plane of consciousness or that plane of consciousness. If one has some desires arising from the mind, starting with the interest of the senses to receive some enjoyment, like good health, or wealth, or prosperity, or good agriculture, or whatever it is, something. Good education, pass your exam. Very popular one in certain parts of the world. Then one turns to those who can assist one to achieve those things. That's asat. And the devas, who are also asat, can dispense. In fact, they are managers of the asat energy. The position of the devas is they're administrative persons in the affairs of material creation. Such persons can dispense benefits that fall in the asat realm. But they themselves are not eternal in their position as devas. It's a post which they enter into and then exit. So they're not dispensers of liberation or entrance into the realm of that which is eternal. And so Vyas, having just compiled the Vedas, which has vast information on how to get this desire or that desire fulfilled in a religious manner by various sacrifices and mantras and observances and austerities and very elevated, pious procedures, one can get those things. And he's provided all of that information within the four Vedas. And he's also given some indication as to the position of liberation. Beyond the Karmakanda section of the Vedas is the Jnana Kanda section of the Vedas, where indication is indirectly gestured to in the form of that realm which lies beyond the realm of Brahman. Largely, this Jnanakanda section of the Vedas indicates the impersonal Brahman, although the indication is there that beyond this impersonal Brahman, or the Brahman feature, is resting upon the personal feature, just like in Bhagavad Gita. Brahmano hi pratishta aham. Pratishta is a nice word. Just like when we install deities, we perform pran pratishta. Pratishta. Pratishta means support or rest. It's not like a physical thing, like the book is resting on the book stand is resting on the hardwood floor, and the hardwood floor is resting on some slab underneath, the slab is resting on some support beams, and the support beams are resting on the foundation is resting on the earth, and somehow the earth is floating. And there's a different kind of pratishta. This pratishta is an existential pratishta, that meaning the existence of one thing is because of the basis and support of another thing. Existentially, this exists because that exists. Like the rays of the sun exist because the sun exists. The sun is the pratishta of the shine of the sun. Similarly, Brahman exists because of the pratishta, or the basis or support of Bhagavan, Krishna's Bhagavan, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. So because Bhagavan exists, he exists in part as the pratishta of Brahman. So he is Parabrahman, and then there's Brahman. And Brahman rests upon Parabrahman existentially. So the Jnanakanda section of the Vedas speak largely about the Brahman, and only in places indicate the Parabrahman, just like in Bhagavad Gita. So, and even more so, is it only indicated within the philosophical portion of the Vedas, or the Upanishad portion of the Vedas. But there's also the portion of the literature, as is the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, where the personality of Godhead is the primary focus, with the understanding that it's already been discussed in this earlier. This is chapter 5 and chapter 3. Specifically, the position of Brahman as but one of the features of the personality of Godhead. Vedanta tat tattva vidas tattvam yad jnanam advayam. The Advaita or non-dual substance is known in these three ways: Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdyate. The Shabda Praman, the basis of not knowing things through spiritual sound vibration. Those who are learned Vedantists, who know the conclusion of the Vedas, have understood this undifferentiated Brahman has different aspects, which sounds like a contradiction, but it's not at all a contradiction. The idea of oneness having different aspects can certainly exist, because each of those aspects are non-dual. There's not the duality like we find here. The duality like we find here is one day it's hot and another day it's cold. And one day you're feeling healthy and another day you're feeling ill. And one day you're happy, another day you're sad. And sometimes it's light and sometimes it's dark. And sometimes it's wet and sometimes it's dry. And sometimes it's this and sometimes it's that. So this is the realm of duality. And in the spiritual realm, everything is of an absolute nature. Of course, to understand absolute nature with the binary processor called the mind, you're not going to be able to do it. So don't sit there, stroke your chin and try to extend the mind, the binary processor, to encompass non-dualism. It can't take place that way. So there's diversity within the non-dual realm, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. They're different features of the same absolute truth. So, back to Vyas. He's just completed compiling all the Vedas, and he's feeling this pinch, this, Prabhupada uses, vacuum, this sense of vacancy. Something's missing. And he's feeling some despondency because of that. Bata, or he's feeling there's a defect. And with his mind, he can't figure it out. Because, as far as he knows, there was no defect, but he's feeling defective. So it's, if any of us are kind of on the side of being honest, we'll also acknowledge that feeling is there. Something's missing. Of course, we can bluff and say, like people say, everything's under control. almost under control. We'll fix it. As Prabhupada would describe, someone's in the hospital, they just had this accident, their limbs are in slings and their legs up in the air and this and that and tubes, and somebody comes and asks them, how are you doing? Oh, I'm okay. A little pain, but okay. This is Vyas. This is not us. This is a person who appears to be like us, but it's important for our edification why he's feeling this way. Because he's compiled that portion of the Vedas which identifies how to satisfy the demands of the body and the demands of the mind. But it's there, but not sufficiently. What are the needs of the soul? Like the classic example, the bird in the cage example. Polishing the cage very nicely without taking care of the bird inside the cage, it'll croak. Then what's the use of the cage? You got a dead bird in a nice cage. So the bird also has to be attended to. And doesn't mean we neglect the cage, but the real important purpose of the cage is the bird inside the cage. The primary attention needs to go to nurturing the soul. So that there are not only this composition that Vyasa created, but there's so many ideologies and philosophies and isms out there in the marketplace, the spiritual marketplace. And look closely when you receive some information about this or that ism. What is the primary focus? What is, or say it differently, what is the highest truth that this particular ism addresses? What's the target? What's the goal? And if the goal is on the platform of the body or the mind or the intelligence, it's not complete, and one will feel this insufficiency. Even in scripture, or at least the rendering of scripture. I was thinking about this SBC program that we had, and the one person in the audience at the end was saying, from a Christian perspective, and then she went on saying what her perspective was. It's not Christian perspective, excuse me, but it's your perspective. I won't go into the detail, it really isn't worth it. From mental speculation. This is a consistent instruction that the Bhagavatam presents. The essence of it is, in order to accept a spiritual conception of life, you have to let go of the material conception of life. When Prahlad Maharaj, some very nice verses, when he's speaking to his classmates, Shanda and Amarka, they left the room. And the kids, what do kids do when the teacher leaves the room? Party time! Bust out, that's boogie. So, the kids want to play. And Prahlad wants to talk about Krishna. And so, he speaks about, let's not waste time. Like, time is very valuable. We're young now, we're thinking we'll do this stuff later. But then he lays out what happens in the course of life. And there's always something to keep one really busy at every stage by design. The soul is exercised by so many things to do that people genuinely say, I have no time. Because they've invested consciousness in matter. Prabhupada explains this very, very beautifully in Ishopanishad, that if you identify with matter, the nature of the material energy is such that material energy will supply you so many things to do, you literally don't have time. But if you simply redirect your attention to the realm of spirit, then another energy works, that's the internal energy. And then one finds the time when before there wasn't time. It's magical. It's a question of identification, where we direct our consciousness. And, you know, we're all busy people. We're not lazy, goofing around people. We find time for spiritual life that previously wasn't there. It's because that's the internal potency and that we should acknowledge. It's the grace of Krishna that we have access to devotional service and the time and other resources and faculties to render devotional service. It's something that the soul needs to awaken a desire for, and Krishna has agents that help awaken that desire. So, but if one takes that assistance of those resources that Krishna sends, then not only time is there, but the facility is there for devotional service. Then there's this other ground of mixed devotion. And when one is approaching Krishna with mixed devotion, one isn't feeling satisfied. We all know what that feeling is. So the teaching that Rupa Goswami gives us is Anya Vilashita Shunyam. Anya Avilash. Other desires, zip. Shunya. And which ones in particular? Well, there's two main categories. Jnana, karma, anavritam. Well, if I don't do those two things, what do? Because my life is made up of those two things. Anukulyena Krishnanushilana. That's what we do. We follow the example of perfected souls, Anushilana. And we cultivate not only their activities, but the consciousness with which those activities are performed, trying to please Krishna by that method. That's what bhakti is. That's our program. And Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching that path of Bhagavat Dharma. And the path of Bhagavat Dharma wants us to know that we shouldn't invest consciousness or value in the bodily or mental planes of consciousness. So Prabhupada taught his friends, Matirna Krishne, Paratak Svatova, Mito Vivandita Prahak Pratanam, Adanta Govir Vishatam Tavishram, Punash Punav Charvata Charvananam. The alliteration is nice. And the message is nice. Matirna Krishne, one will not be able to think of Krishna. That's greatly unfortunate. Even if you somehow wanted to, you won't be able to. Vatirna Krishna Paratak Svatova. As long as there is this Adanta Govir, the strong desire to enjoy the facilities of the senses with this human form of life. As long as that's there, that person cannot help themselves, another person cannot help them, and the combination of the two cannot help them. It's too bad. It's just struggle. Daivihi esha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. But there's an option. So, at any stage of life, Prahlad was speaking to six-year-olds, at any stage of life one can understand this message. The classmates of Prahlad understood the message. And they took the path that Prahlad was encouraging them in. The path of devotional service. He taught them how to chant, and they started chanting. And Sandamarka came in and screamed, "What's going on?" And that's when Prahlad spoke this verse. Prahlad was brought, marshaled to Hiranyakashipu's big throne. "Your son is chanting God's name." And Hiranyakashipu said, "Where did you learn this?" And essentially, Prahlad didn't answer him. He just said, "You'll never understand." But here in the Krishna Paratakshma, that was where the verse comes. Your you're helpless. I can't help you, you can't help yourself. A whole army of people can't help you because you're Adanta Govir Vishatam Tamishram Punap Charvata Charvanam. And just you just keep doing it. When there's another very nice verse, many very nice verses, but in Prahlad's prayers to Lord Nrisingadeva, he says the same thing. He says a lot of things, but this part he also says. In his prayers, he first says, "The demigods have asked me to come before you and speak, but I have no qualification to do that. In fact, I have disqualification. Let me tell you what my disqualifications are." And he elaborates his disqualifications. Then he says, "But I know you are very merciful. And whatever it is that one comes before you to offer, if it's offered with genuine devotion, you'll accept, so I'll speak something. And because you're merciful, you'll accept it." So he speaks about the plight of the conditioned soul in the conditioned stage and the helpless, totally dependent position of the conditioned soul. By misdeeds destined to hellish planets, by good deeds destined to heavenly planets, and generally some combination of those two, and you just keep rotating around and around, and it's this endless cycle of birth and death, unless one somehow contacts your pure devotees. And then one can become relieved of that condition. So he prays to the Supreme Lord for such association. "O my Lord Nrisingadeva, by engaging in your transcendental loving service in the association of devotees who are liberated souls, I shall become completely uncontaminated by the association of these modes of material nature and be able to chant the glories of your Lordship who are so dear to me. I shall chant your glories following exactly in the footsteps of Lord Brahma and his disciplic succession," that means Narada, because that's who Prahlad heard the message of Srimad Bhagavatam from while he was still within the womb of his mother. "I want such association." And then he says, "My Lord Nrisingadeva, O Supreme, because of the bodily conception of life, embodied souls neglected and not cared for by you cannot do anything for their betterment." Like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, "Mogasya moga karma no moga jnana vicheta saha rakshasim asarim chaivas." Gets worse as you go along. He says that it's essentially before one even gets started, if one doesn't have faith in this transcendental message, you're defeated. So, like, throw in the towel because it's over before you even start. Without having the association of this transcendental message and having faith in this transcendental message, one is defeated. Mogasha, one's hopes or one's desires, moga karma, moga jnana, you know, one, two, it's not even 1-2 punch, it's a 1-2-3. KO. Finished. Instead, one takes shelter of demoniac conceptions of life. So there's the divine and the demoniac nature that are described in Bhagavad Gita. Prahlad is addressing personalities like his father and all the other bodies that are strewn all over the place, those that were attacking Lord Nrisingadeva and lost their lives because of their disposition, their ill disposition towards Prahlad because of his representing the Supreme Lord. They were finished. So, whatever remedies such persons in the bodily conception of life accept, although perhaps temporarily beneficial, like, hey, it just got better, are certainly impermanent. Oh, it just got worse again. For example, he gives three examples. A father and mother cannot protect their child, meaning it's the duty of parents to protect their children, but they can make all arrangements to protect their children, and something can happen. So we're not the doers, is the idea. We perform our duty. That's what we do. That's our responsibility. But our protection capacity is completely dependent upon the personality of Godhead. Or a physician and medicine cannot relieve a suffering patient. Now, sometimes medicine can relieve a suffering, but it's not in the hands of the physician. It's in the hands of God. Sometimes the medicines cure and sometimes they don't. Sometimes the patient dies, or at least continues to suffer. And a boat on the ocean cannot protect a drowning man. You can take a boat out into the ocean or some body of water and pull a drowning man into the boat, but then a big storm comes and the boat flips and he's back in the ocean again. So we can do things to assist other people, this is the idea, but even if we are able to do so, it's by the grace of God, and that can also be withdrawn and it can also be not successful. So our real dependency is upon the personality of Godhead, and those that are in the bodily conception don't recognize that, so their endeavors are ultimately fruitless. Some adjustment in the configuration of matter to make things safe is not safe. To make adjust matter so now we have a situation of happiness, it's not real happiness, and that situation will also change in a moment, and there goes the happiness. You know, but materialists are very stubborn. Really stubborn. Consider Jarasandha. How many times? He's like personification of stubbornness. He was defeated, totally smashed, so many times. And he kept going back and getting another army and trying again and trying again and trying again. And material life is all about trying again and trying again. Getting beat up, trying again. Sometimes people become suicidal. I can't take it anymore. That's not a solution either. There is a solution. And the solution is provided in the Bhagavatam. The solution is being provided here by Narada to Vyas. How the feeling of insufficiency, even when he's the perfectly knowledgeable, not just scholar, not even just professor. He's the literary incarnation. But if one brings inordinate emphasis, or the other way around, not sufficient and proper emphasis to the soul, inordinate emphasis upon the body or the mind, then even Vyasadeva or any virtuous person is going to feel insufficient. And rightly so. So what is that sufficiency? That's described in the second chapter, Savai Pungsam, Paro Dharmo, Yitori Bhakti and Hoksuje, Ahoitaki Pratyata Yadma, Suprasyadati. By devotional service unto Vasudev Krishna, that's Ahoitaki Pratyata, without motivation, without interruption. then one can be fully satisfied. Pure devotional service, one can feel fully satisfied. Be honest, you should compile that literature. Before compiling that literature, I have one other request, that is, get the realization. And he then describes his realization of the same and encourages Vyasa to take up that same method. And that's the Bhagavatam is the fruit of that. So any discussion, questions, comments? Yeah.
As you were explaining Prahlad Maharaj's verse, that one who is very strongly engaged in sense gratification, such a person, neither by himself nor by the help of others, can they think of it. Mm-hmm. We also see Prabhupada and his followers going out and extending the message to such people.
Prahlad himself is doing that with his classmates.
How does that change somebody's heart? What does that change?
On
one hand, it cannot be.
The answer is this. The initial effort is to relieve the person of the material conception of life. If you try to make the person happy without removing the material conception of life, it will be unsuccessful. Saying the same thing, but in a different way. Prabhupada explained on a number of occasions that the primary responsibility of a spiritual master is to help the disciple understand the abject futility of pursuing happiness in the material world, like looking for water in a desert. By definition, as a desert is a place without water. That's what deserts are. Now go into the desert and find happiness. I'll be your spiritual master. I'll assist you to find happiness by combinations of things. That's another person being unable to help the individual. So, nor helping themselves.
In that case, one direct instruction or teaching helps, or even then the mercy of the Lord is necessary for the person to understand that.
Well, with the teaching comes the mercy of the Lord. With transcendental teaching comes the, it's part of the package. It doesn't come without the mercy of the Lord. It's a manifestation of the mercy of the Lord. So then it depends on how one regards the Lord or how one regards oneself. And for that reason, when there is difficulty, when there's some reversal, it's a good opportunity for reaching out and taking the message. So we find this. Krishna says it in Bhagavad Gita. Four types of people take up devotional service. They're distressed. They're in economic hardship, so they go to God. Help. And they get out of that difficulty, and then they forget, you know, see you later. Thanks a lot. It's been nice knowing you. So, religious or spiritual people often have the service of assisting people in moments of difficulty. But not just, you know, like a government providing social security or, you know, unemployment compensation or something like that. But on a deeper level. Because overall, whether one is in an affluent or impoverished condition or is healthy, apparently, or in a unhealthy condition, or educated or uneducated, whatever the dualities are. The soul is forgetful of the real position of happiness by their consciousness being covered. And so the real business is to uncover that consciousness, re-excavate that lost Krishna consciousness. And in so doing, so many services can be done. That's what people, you know, that's what our careers are. You do something that's of benefit to other people. That's your career. And while doing your career, your ultimate task is to re-excavate the dormant Krishna consciousness of others. And it starts with this message we just, you know, helping them understand the soul that's beyond the body and mind identification. And that's a challenge. We all know what a challenge that is, but that's our service. And it's not we who are going to do it, but it's Krishna and the mercy of Krishna that will do it. We just carry the envelope and pass it along. Postal peon. Oh, well, this is for you. It's got your name on it. Beyond birth and death, back to Godhead. Bhagavad Gita. That's our book distribution program. And the consciousness of the devotee is like that. There's a message inside for you. It's got your name on the envelope. It's for you. From Krishna.
So the person who has to receive that envelope, not everyone receives.
Yeah. Well, but our business is to be just deliver the messages. And, you know, Krishna's got a big supply of messages. Anything else?
Yeah. In the process of going from material identification to identifying oneself as a spiritual being, the process involves identifying the various material energies that act, or the anarthas that we have accumulated.
Yeah, to a degree. It's not that they won't go away if you don't know what they are. Process is not dependent upon your knowing all the varieties of species of weeds in the garden. If you don't know what the species of weeds are, they won't be able to remove them. There's a weed removing process. This is what you want, and the rest goes.
My question is, I see these weeds, and in even though my understanding is I should not act under the influence of these, let me give a specific example. I know that I understand that I'm finding fault because of pride, which I think I have, and I'm trying to find fault with another person. Though I have this understanding, but I'm not able to stop that. The mind keeps finding fault. So how can I act in such a way that this will be
remote? Well, did you, if you were attentive in class yesterday, you would have heard the answer. I'll repeat it. I specifically addressed pride, right? And pride comes from I and mind consciousness, the material I and material mind, and what's mine, I'm really proud of it. So if you want to root out pride, you give credit to where things come from the source, where it comes from. And that takes care of pride. I don't want to give credit to where things come from. I want to take the credit. Well, your pride is going to stay. So, how do I work on giving credit when my stubbornness says I don't want to? Well, There's two methods. The second method we don't prefer, that's the suffer method. And the method that we prefer is you hear and you receive instructions. You receive knowledge in a submissive manner. Well, that's part of the problem because I've got this pride and I don't want to be submissive. Then suffer. But, you know, I don't want to suffer. Okay, then be submissive. Or I don't be submissive. Kind of. So, Krishna sees our efforts and, you know, being part of a process helps us move along the purification system. So, initially, I'm taking up the process because I don't like to suffer. I'll be honest with you. I'm taking up the process because I don't like to suffer. After some time, when the suffering relieves, then I can slack into the process. I can slack into submission because I don't have to do it anymore. My suffering just got relieved, okay? Then more suffering comes in. Oh, I've got more submission, I guess. I don't like to suffer. So at some point, one has to come to the position of making a conscious choice. I want not just this yo-yo game of back and forth. I want the genuine thing. I want a relationship with Krishna, and I'm going to perform devotional service because I want to act in my relationship with Krishna. And the yo-yo game stops. Because so it's how you receive the message. Is it just a temporary antidote? Or is it an eternal solution? And Krishna will supply that intelligence. And Krishna can also withhold the intelligence. Well, you can play the yo-yo game. Yaitam mahapadyante tam sadaiva pajami hum. It's in your hand. So it's not... The awakening of Krishna consciousness is our eagerness to receive that. And incrementally, one can acknowledge with gratitude something. So there's a good start. Acknowledge something with gratitude. And then cultivate that. I'm not suffering like I used to. I have good association. And so on. My habits are much cleaner and better. I can curb my anger a little better than before. I become a better person, somewhat. So you can make an inventory of how you've benefited and feel gratitude in one's heart for that benefit that one has derived. And then when you receive something and you feel genuine gratitude, you want to extend something in exchange for that gratitude. It's still mercantile to a degree. I receive, so I'm obliged to give something back because you know it's not nice if you don't give something back. And my mother taught me I should be nice, so I'll try to give something back. But so it helps one move along incrementally along the path of purification. And as that gradual purification takes place, the sankalpa, vikalpa, accepting, rejecting of the mind will subside because one's consciousness will have moved to another level of consciousness. And you, because of strong identification with the body and the mind, we're in this yo-yo position. And it's embarrassing, but it's in our position. But we want, to the extent that you want and commit to that spiritual position, then there's the resource that Krishna is supplying to get there. you exercise gratitude in your heart. Krishna is sending this resource. Let me reciprocate. Let me take shelter. But I can't bring my dirty laundry with me. I have to leave it at the doorstep. My package. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Yeah.